FM named Mike, and I am definitely in an addict. And I forgot everything I was gonna say. And I don't memorize, but now it's all gone. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the program committee, CPRC NA 18, the Tri-County area, and all involved in putting this convention on. Let's get them a hand, because it's a lot of work making this happen. It's a lot of work involved in making something like this happen. I'm also grateful that they asked me to come and share on the staff. They could have asked anybody to do this. They could have asked any one of y'all to come in to share on the first step. The first step is a very, very important step for me. And I'd just like to say that I am so glad that the last one has been the last one. You know what I mean? And I am so grateful to God for that, because I will always say, well, this going to be the last one. Ain't doing this no more. Ain't doing this tomorrow, you know. This is it. And you know how that story goes. When tomorrow comes, start it all over again. The madness, the sickness, the craziness. By the way, my choice of drugs is drugs. Make that clear. Okay. Preferably more and free. All you got. All you got to pay for. It's all right. My clean date is August the 14th, 1986. I came in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. In a lot of trouble. I really didn't know how sick I was, how crazy I was until I got here. But before coming to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I learned by doing the step work with my sponsor, getting the sponsor, getting involved in this program, I learned that it was something always wrong with me. Way before I ever picked up any drugs or anything, something was wrong with me. And I was always different than all my brothers and sisters. They were different, so to speak. Not saying that, you know, they don't need to be here, but it's like I'm the only one that made it here out of all them. And I remember as a kid that the teacher used to always call my house because it was always something I was doing wrong. And they would always had to come up to the school to get me. And they never had to do that for none of my brothers and sisters, you know. None of them never used drugs. None of them never made it to this program. But I did. It was something always different about me. And I never knew what that was. It seemed like what they was trying to give me, it just wasn't enough for a guy like me. I really don't know what that was. It was just that, it was just something different about me. And I needed more. I needed something different. And I remember just being real shy, being very insecure, and being shameful of my living situation. And it was a lot of us, and we didn't have a lot. We were very kind of poor. And I was always afraid to bring people over to my house to show them where we stayed at, because it was, you know, it was raggedy, you know, really, you know. And people would say, where you live, Mike? And I always point to a beautiful house, you know. And I was always wait till they leave, and then I ease on to where I live. And I would never bring anybody to my house. I used to meet a lot of young ladies, and I remember, you know, they would always invite me to their house. And I would never take them to mine. I would always tell my parents at work, and I can't get you, can't have no company till they come home. You know, it's always some excuse of why, you know, I couldn't do that. But it was the shame. I found out later on it was the shame of my living situation and not having a lot of things and not having a lot of clothes and having passed me down things. And my brothers and them, we used to have to wear and share the same clothes. I remember going to school with holes in my shoes and being ashamed of that. And all my socks had holes in them for, you know, when it get wet outside, you know, and that cardboard get wet, you know. You be walking on the ground with your bare feet, you know. And I was always ashamed. You know, my clothes had patches on them and things like that. And I always want what other people had. Back then, I was always looking on the outside to make me feel good on the inside. And I would always say that if I could just have some of the clothes and things that other people have, then I would be all right, you know. And I always had a desire to get an alpaca sweater. Always wanted an alpaca sweater and a Zero King coat, you know. And some Chuck Taylors. Some Chuck Taylor shoes. I wanted some Chuck Taylor shoes. Because all my shoes came out the Safeway, out the basket. They used to sell shoes at the Safeway. You know, you get, I think, with 2 pairs for $5 back then. You know, that it's been a while ago, but, you know. And that's the kind of stuff that I used to have. And my parents, I remember buying some of them shoes one time and going on a playground playing basketball. And I was trying to look real cool and slick, make a slick move. And I slipped and the whole bottom of the shoe came out. And I felt so embarrassed behind that. And I had to walk home with that, with just the other part just tied on. And it was just a lot of that kind of stuff that I was feeling way before I got to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And the program helped me to get in touch with these feelings that I was having. I didn't understand them. I just knew that something was always different and wrong with me. I would used to just take bottles and throw them at buses and break out school windows and take snowballs and put rocks in them and throw them at people and stuff. You know, we would take cats and just put them in trash cans, put ash cans and M80s and cherry bombs in them, and just a boom, just watch them, just, you know. Man, that's out of the curity. You know, I can't do that. I couldn't do that today. But something was wrong. Something was wrong with me way before I got here. And then when I began to put alcohol and drugs on top of it, it just magnified that kind of behavior. And I just went to a whole nother level with the insanity and the craziness. I began to use it at an early age. I guess I was about 14 to 15 years old, but probably a little earlier than that, because my mother, I was introduced to alcohol. Alcohol was my first drug. Besides dizzy, I used to like to spin around in circles real fast, just spin real fast and just stop and just be, you know. And I used to love that, love to do that, you know. Luncheon early. young age, luncheon early. And but they used to have parties on Fridays, and they used to drink beer. My uncles and cousins, all of them would come over, and they would have parties, and they would leave the stuff down, laying around. Me and my brothers used to clean up behind them, and we would always drink whatever was left. And so alcohol became my first drug of choice, and I liked the way it made me feel. And it did something to me on the inside. And it gave me the courage to do and say the things normally that I couldn't say and do. I was always afraid to talk to girls. When I went into junior high school, I used to play a lot of ball, and even in high school. But I was always afraid. I was afraid of rejection. I was afraid because I didn't feel that I measured up. And I felt the loneliness, the isolation, and things like that, the shame and the guilt, and I didn't feel worthy of myself. So I was always afraid to talk to females. And I remember, you know, my first female, talking to her, my first girlfriend I had, and you know, it's nothing like being young and in love. I love that feeling of being young and in love, or having a fresh love, or have a brand new person that you just fallen in love with. It's a heck of a feeling when you're going through that. You know, you're dating, you're meeting, and everything new, everything hunky dory. You ain't seen none of their defects yet. You know. You ain't seen none of that. You just enjoying it, just having a good time, you know. And I remember just having that and meeting her, my first love, and I caught her with another guy, you know. And that kind of bothered me because I didn't know how, you know, I'm afraid, I'm scared and everything, and I didn't know how to deal with that. But when I would drink and then smoke that, you know, that homegrown stuff, you know, that would help me deal with what I was going through, the feeling of rejections. And I would just go home in the basement, turn the blue light on, and I put on the Al Green, "How Do You Mend a Broken Heart?" And, you know what I'm saying? And I put on the Shy Lights, "Have You Seen Her?" "This is the coldest day of my life," you know. I just go to that, smoke that stuff and drink that stuff, you know what I mean? And that would just help me get through that. I would just amplify and play that crazy music, you know. But that would just help me, you know, get through that. And it just escalated. My drug use just escalated. And I began to use any and everything to help me deal with the feeling. What I was doing for you is just painting a picture of you or why I believe that I use. And some of the feelings and things that I went through before I understood the powerlessness and the unmanageability. These things were prevalent in my life before I even got to the program to understand all of this. So by the time I got here, I was more dead than alive, frustrated, confused, purposeless, hopeless, had lost all direction. My life had turned on a whole different kind of demeanor. And I wound up being something that I never, ever thought would happen to a person like me. Because the only thing I ever wanted to do was just have some fun. You know, I did not want to be an addict. I didn't start out to be no addict. You know, I didn't wake up one day and say, "Well, I guess I'll go to Narcotics Anonymous and sit up in the meetings and get a sponsor and work the steps." You know, back then they were smoking cigarettes and all that kind of stuff. No, it didn't happen like that for me. It was possession of some things that took place in my life to lead me to this program. And like I say, when I got here, I was in real, real bad shape. At the end of my addiction, I had begun to steal, lie, cheat, do everything, sacrifice all my principles and morals one by one. And it hurt so much, you know, because I never really wanted that for myself, and I never thought that I would wind up the way that I would end up. But people along the way will always tell me that, "Mike, you know, you need to take a look at what you're doing." And I guess back then I was saying, keep the focus on yourself. But they were trying to help me then, and I couldn't see it. And by the time when I got here, my credit was shot. I didn't have no credit. I was stinking. I had sold all the thing I had. I was take clothes off my back and sell it just to get drugs. I would pawn everything that I had. I used to go to pawn shops so much they knew me by first name basis. And always wanted the same thing when I went there. $20. Just give me $20. You know, that's all I need. $20. You know, they knew it. You know, and my fiance had to sleep with a pocketbook. Had to take it with her to the bathroom because I would go in there and take money out of it because I had to use. And it got to a point where I could not stop. You know, even though I wanted to stop, I could not stop. With all the philosophy, analytical thinking, logic, as smart as I thought I was, I could not stop, you know. And I pride myself on being smart. I like to be intelligent And I used to like to read Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and all the great minds of the universe. And I'd smoke a joint of that boat and be lunching right there with them, you know. Be lunching. Yeah, the you know, what come first, the chicken or the egg, you know. All that, you know. And philosophizing, all that crazy stuff, you know. It don't mean nothing to nobody. But that's what I do, you know. I'm an expert at that, you know, the lunching, you know, lunchology, you know. Expert. And that's what I did. And I look back at it now, and it was so crazy. It wasn't crazy and funny then, because it made plenty of sense then. But I was in real bad shape. And I remember praying, asking God to help me, because I had lost all power to stop. And I began to do some things, like I say, sacrifice my morals. And I would take my daughter with me on the strip and things like that, and leave her in the car, you know, order on oil and then all that kind of stuff. And it was just a lot of degradation of myself, because I wanted more out of life than that. And drugs would not allow me to have it, you know. And so when I went into treatment, they let me in and they asked me, did I use, how much I use, and I just say, you know, a beer here and there. You know, I just use a little bit, you know. But I came in there, both of my hands were swollen, my arms was all big. I was, you know, I looked like Popeye, I guess, you know, from shooting so much drugs. And I remember, like, you know, walking around in the summertime with long sleeves, 100 degrees outside. Running, walking around with long sleeve shirts, trying to hide what I was doing. But everybody knew what I was doing but me. You know, I was the last one to know that he didn't know, that he didn't know, okay, that he really didn't know what he was doing, you know. And so I went in there, they told me what I needed to do to get myself together. They said, get a sponsor, go to meetings, pray, help someone, no strings attached. Most of all, that you cannot use under any circumstances. They said, you have lost the right to use, and you cannot use under any circumstances. And by that time, I was willing to do whatever they told me to do, because I was fresh out of ideas. I had stayed out there long enough to try everything under the sun to stop. So I stopped trying to tell myself what was best for me when I really didn't know, and I didn't have no tools for life, and it was evident. Because I was a grown man, and I was a bum. I didn't have nothing for the years that I had been on this earth. As a result of using, it had took everything away. So they helped me introduce, they introduced me to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank God for the program. And back then they was talking about working steps, getting involved with the program, getting a sponsor, getting the steps. So I got a sponsor, and I began to let this guy help me. It's so important to let someone help you. And I let them hug me. I let people just bring me back together. And they hugged me until I was able to learn to love myself. They loved me. They took me places. They told me that it was going to be all right, that all I have to do is just keep coming back. Don't use under any circumstances. Go to a meeting every day and pray. Pray. Say, find a God of your understanding. And if you have a problem with God, just use the term good orderly direction. Okay. And I could identify with that, because all my directions wasn't good and wasn't nothing in order with my direction. Wasn't nothing orderly about none of that for the way I was living. And that's what I did. I took their suggestions. And I got that sponsor. I went through the steps. I went to work, and he took me to the first step, and that's where I began to write and read that in the book. The literature helped explain to me who I was, because I didn't know who I was. I know I had became a lot of different things, because as a result of using, I took on a lot of strange mannerisms and behaviors, and I learned a lot of that stuff from y'all. Y'all people did that, because y'all taught me all that stuff that I learned, because I was hanging with y'all. And y'all was showing me all that stuff to do. And I didn't know who I was. I had lost myself in the process, because I didn't know who I was. Because I had did this with Joe Box and them. Mm-hmm. I did this with Snake and them. Mm-hmm. I did this with Squirrel and them. Okay. You know what I'm saying? I was this with Bucky and them. Okay. You know. So I didn't know who I was. Because I take on all this behavior. And when I read the basic text, and it said, who is an addict? That explained to me who I was. And it helped me to understand what I needed to do to get my life together. And I got with my sponsor, and he started me on the first step, where I began to write about my powerlessness and my unmanageability. And it was clear to me, without any shadow of a doubt, that I was an addict and that my life has been unmanageable, and I was powerless to change things through my own power. They said that I needed to get in touch with a power that was greater than myself, because I was dealing with a very, very serious illness. That I had a very serious illness and that it needed to be treated. And the way that I treated it is through abstinence, one day at a time, that I could not use no matter what. And they say, Mike, you cannot use no matter what happened. You had no more reason and excuses to use. They say if you walk down the street and you get hit by a bus, that's a good day for you if you don't use. I'm saying what? Well, that, you know, I'm trying to figure that one out, you know. But it was, no matter what had happened, if I didn't use, it was a good day. It was a good day for me because now I could stand, you know, I could come back the next day and correct whatever I did wrong if I didn't use. And I had to surrender to this new way of life. And that was tough, to give up my old behavior, to give up my old friends, my playground, playmates, playthings. I had to give up all of them. You know, they say if you go around a hot dog stand, sooner or later you're going to buy a hot dog. If you hang around the barber shop, sooner or later you're going to get a haircut. And basically what they was telling me, if I kept going around my old friends, that I would eventually start using again because I didn't have the power not to use. And I didn't understand that earlier, but I stayed long enough. And I was so glad that I was sick enough to have to stay long enough for this stuff to begin to register in my mind. And it started making more sense to be clean than to use. Now, that took a long time to happen because even in recovery, in the program, early stages of my recovery process, I still wanted to use. I was going to meetings and stuff, but the obsession was still there. And it was tough to fight that because my mind kept telling me that it wasn't that bad. You know, you could just do one more, you know. Don't worry about it. You can just do it on the weekend. Okay. You know, you'll be able to control it this time. You know, and it just kept telling me that kind of stuff, and I'm listening to it. You know, and I want to believe it, but then I look at my story and I said, wait a minute, something ain't right. You know, I ain't never been able to do just one. You know, I ain't never been able to control it. Put one beer in the refrigerator, you know. I mean, buy six, put five in there, and then drink one, and then come back next week and get the next one, you know. I could never, I remember the powerlessness. And I used to tell myself, well, holiday coming. Well, ain't going to be no good drugs out there. So buy two or three of them and you'll save it to the next time. And when they come back out, you'll be all right. Put it in the drawer. You know. And wake up in the morning and get it. I couldn't go to sleep. Till all of them was gone. I could not go to sleep. Ain't no wake up in the morning. I couldn't go to sleep just knowing that stuff there, the powerlessness, and how it makes your life so unmanageable, the hopelessness, the dirty and the filthiness of this disease when I'm using. So I thank God so much for my sponsor who helped me see this, and you guys, because I'm a product of you guys helping me get back together. I'm not here because of what I know. I'm here because of what I didn't know.
Okay.
And what I know today, if it's any value at all, I learned it from y'all. It wasn't from me. So I have to understand my powerlessness. Today, I'm still powerless. I've been here quite a while. And I'm still powerless. I'm just as powerless today if I choose to pick up. My powerlessness has now went into different areas of my life. You know, it's not so much the drugs and alcohol now. I have to work on my behavior. You know, I have to work on my emotions, how I feel. I'm powerless over my emotions, and I'm powerless over the things that come in my head, the thoughts that come in my head that a lot of time could jackpot me because I misread something or misunderstood something. But my mind tell me that, you know, yeah, you right. They wrong. You right. You know. Always tell me that, you know, I'm right, they wrong, you know. Yeah, they just picking on you, you know. And it be dead wrong. You know, I'd be dead wrong with my thinking. And I have to understand my powerlessness. I bought this cake. Crumb cake. And I've been trying to work on my diet, my weight, you know. And my thinking was, okay, you just get this cake. Now, after you finish eating this whole cake, you ain't gonna want no more. Then you can stop. And that didn't work. I ate that cake. I want another one. And I'm just powerless over sweets. That's my thing. I love sweets, cookies, cakes, stuff like that. And I have to surrender that. I have to surrender that to another level. You know, because I have no power over things. I understand that my powerlessness, you know, I don't gain the power over people, places, and things. But what I will get some help with is learning how to change me. You know what I'm saying? Not the situations may not always change, but I have to learn to work on myself, to constantly look at what I'm doing in these situations. And when I do that, and when I look at my powerlessness and not try to run things, then I'm more willing to get out the way and to give that space back to God, one that has all power, you know. And they told me that it comes a point in time in your recovery process. In all of our recovery process, I know it has been in mine, where the only thing that stands between you and using again will be a God of your understanding. Or even if you don't use, to keep you from going stock raving mad, you know, will be a God of your understanding. I experienced that because I had lunched out in here clean. You know, I was powerless over situations, but I try to control them because with my intellect. Because, you know, I think I'm smart. I think I'm smarter than most people, you know. I wasn't as bad as y'all, you know. Y'all needed to be here. I didn't really need to be here, but I just came anyway, you know. You know, but that's the craziness. But I have really enjoyed this journey since I've been here. And I'm not afraid of myself anymore, you know. I feel pretty good about what I'm doing. I like my life today. A lot of the things that I said I used to do, I don't do no more. I got good credit today.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I don't go to pawn shop. I haven't been to pawn shop since I've been here. You know, that's been almost 18, 17 and a half years. You know, and my relationship with my family is better. My fiance, I wound up marrying her. And she don't have to sleep with her pocketbook anymore. You know what I'm saying? And that's a direct result of this process and understanding my powerlessness and that I cannot use because I found out that I didn't use drugs. Drugs used me. Drugs took away a good part of my life. And it was because I allowed that process to take place. But I don't have to do that anymore. You know what I'm saying? I could get back all the things that I lost if I'm willing to just stay on this journey. And you don't have to understand the journey, but just stay on it. And if you stay on it, the fruits of your labor will begin to show, and you will get the freedom that we get from active addiction. When that last one is the last one. And that's a good feeling when you wake up in the morning and you know where you've been the night before. You know what I'm saying? You know what you did the night before, you know. And you wake up with a few coins in your pocket. You know, you don't have to worry about where can I get one from, you know. Who got it today? You know, is it any good? You know that kind of craziness. And I just thank this process and so much and understanding that powerlessness, understanding that I can't use even after all these years, that I still cannot use. I'm still powerless over people, places, and things. I still cannot change things. I cannot make no one get clean. You know, if my cousin or a friend of mine or somebody want to come to the program, I have no power, whether they stay here or not. You know, even in sponsees, even in sponsoring people, that's another area of powerlessness. When you're trying to help people and you try to share your experience, strength, and hope with them, and they choose to do something else. But I'm powerless over that. It's not that, you know, that's my fault. I have to understand my role in situations, understand my powerlessness, that I have no power, but I will get some power to do God's will. God will give me the power that I need to do what's right for the right reason. And that feels so good. I want to thank y'all for allowing me to share. And with that, I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you, Mike. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker. His name is Dave Kay.
Hi, I'm Dave and I'm an addict. It's good to be here. I keep telling myself that this is service and I'm doing this to help myself. And that service is where we do things on an equal basis. In other words, I'm an addict and you're an addict. And so I'm no different than you. I'm just up here and you're out there. Because I'm like Mike. I'm pretty nervous up here. I was thinking back when I first was sent to going to a detox. I was working a job and you know, I'm messed up. I'd been out for a week or more, and they were going to fire me if I didn't go to a detox. So I went to this health facility, you know, state health facility, and I remember the doctor there told me, you know, she said, "You think you're too smart to end up on the street. You know, you think that you can get by with this and keep on going." And I said, "Well, you know, I got a good job, and I'm pretty smart, so I think, you know, if nothing else, I could always get a job at McDonald's or something, you know." But when I got here finally, the last time, I hope it's the last time, and I was pretty much at the point of living on the street and unemployable. You know, I had like a bag of clothes, and, you know, I had some tools and a stereo at the last place I stayed, but you know they were holding on to it for me. So when I got here, you know, I had one place that I, you know, my brother offered me a place to live. This is all down in North Carolina, and my brother offered me a place to live up here in Maryland where he was staying, and I took a bus up here. And when I met my sister-in-law downtown, she said, "So you're going to quit partying?" And, you know, I said, "Well, you know, I'd still like to be able to smoke a joint on the weekends." Okay. And I knew as soon as it came out of my mouth, I knew that that wasn't a possibility because I couldn't just use on the weekends. I'd prove that, you know, because when I first got here, I tried just not drinking and just using drugs, you know, and then I tried just drinking and not using any other drugs. And I tried just cocaine. And I tried just, you know, marijuana. And I just, you know, I tried everything. I tried to, you know, taking a 12-pack over to a friend's house and only drinking six. I had to borrow two from him, you know. You know, it just didn't work. And so when I said that, I knew right deep down inside of me, I knew. I had no reservations, you know. I did have a reservation, but I knew it was a false reservation. And I knew I couldn't do it. I knew that I was powerless. And when I got here and the 12 steps were presented to me, you know, by a sponsor, you know, in the meetings, I learned that I had, you know, a physical, spiritual, and mental illness, a disease. And that's what we call it, and disease of addiction. And, you know, what killed me, you know, when I got here is I just didn't know, you know, what I could do about it. And I didn't know, you know, when I read the first step, I thought, you know, we're doomed. You know, I'm doomed. I'm powerless over this addiction, and my life's unmanageable. And, you know, and that sounded pretty negative to me. But then I read on, it talked about surrender. And, you know, one of the things that it talks about in the step guide, is that it talks about having to give up the drugs before we start recovery. And that's, you know, total abstinence is what we have to have. And I guess, you know, with other things, it talks about, you know, as you come back through the steps, that you have to stop. And I don't know how you stop eating, but I hadn't figured that one out yet. But I guess it's stop eating the bad stuff and start only eat the good stuff would be my first guess. But anyway, you know, when I got here, I thought, I know this. I know that I'm powerless over addiction. You know, I figured that out. I've tried it every way I know to use, and I just can't use without using out of control. And the unmanageability of my life was, you know, externally was pretty obvious, you know, because I'd pretty much been living on the street. I didn't have any of my belongings that I used to have, you know, and I was just a mess. And, you know, when I first started back, I told myself, well, I needed to do all the things that I don't want to do, and I need to not do the things I wanted to do because I wanted to use. You know, I wanted to lay around the house all day. I didn't want to work. You know, I didn't want to brush my teeth. I didn't want to take a shower. I didn't want to do any of that. But that's what I needed to do. I didn't really want to go to a meeting, but that's what I needed to do. So I kind of used that as a guide the first month or so before I got, you know, before I hooked up with a sponsor. And, you know, the unmanageability inside, you know, and I was like Mike, you know, I thought I was too smart for this, you know, that, how could this happen? I'm an intelligent guy, you know, and it didn't have anything to do with intelligence. I didn't know that, you know. So, you know, as I worked the steps more, you know, I started figuring out some of these things. And, you know, when I think of surrendering, I think, you know, okay, I've got to turn myself over to somebody, you know. I got to give up, all right, you know. So I got to give up the using, and I got to surrender. You know, what am I surrendering to? And, it, you know, the only thing I could come up with at the time was a power greater than myself or the program. And that's what I used. I used this program as my higher power for a long time. Because I had tried, you know, instead of reading a basic text, reading the Bible, and, you know, it didn't keep me clean. And I went back out. But finally, when I got here and I was ready to try stop not using it all, then the program seemed to work. And, you know, it worked for everybody around me, so I assumed it would work for me. And, you know, that's about all I have. I wanted to share a bunch of, you know, really spiritual stuff up here, but the bottom line is the first step for me was about, you know, realizing that I was powerless and that my life was unmanageable and surrendering to this program. And thanks for letting me share.
Okay, let's thank everybody for, I mean, let's thank Mike and Dave for sharing. Okay, the meeting is still going on. If there's anyone who would like to share, they can come up to the podium and share.
Hi, fam. My name is Rudy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Rudy.
First of all, let me say that I my home group is the best kept secret up in Harlem, 118th Street, and 118th and Fifth Avenue. And for me, I couldn't say I'm a project kid. Let me just get real. And growing up in the project, there was nothing about surrendering. You fought until you got knocked out. And then you got up and you fought again. And so I came from a particular lifestyle that surrender was not in my vocabulary. So what happened was, along the way, picking up the Blys and the Playboy sneakers and the lifestyle, I picked up the drugs. And so the unmanageability part was that toward the end, after my mother took her key, my wife took the key, they started changing locks on a brother and told me that I had a problem and I needed to go do something about it. So I surrendered just a little because I'm from the keep coming back process. There we go. First step. And what happened was I kept losing jobs and made that walk down the hall to, you know, working for the state of New York. You know, I surrendered. Okay. They said, if you don't, if your ass is late to work one more time, you will be fired.
Okay.
So I made that walk. I surrendered gradually to what was going on in my life. And then these cats from H&I, I must speak about H&I, they came up there and they were sharing the message of recovery and that they were glowing and the girls, the women were looking good, and they suggested that when I left there to make a meeting. But my thinking sitting there was that I had a check waiting for me when I was in the rehab. So I didn't surrender. I only surrendered gradually. And so after the, not the first, not the second, not the third, but the fourth rehab, I kind of like came out on that third step, made that decision. And I was going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I picked up the literature. I flipped whatever was going on. Instead of chasing the dope and the methadone and the angel dust and all that other stuff, I said, well, let me give Narcotics Anonymous a try. So what happened was the unmanageability of being in that rehab after waking up after every 10 days or 7 days, you know, damn, I'm back in here again. And so when I finally surrendered to the program in Narcotics Anonymous and found out what the disease of addiction was, I didn't know what the disease of addiction was, man, you know. So I found out what the disease was, that one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And so I put the drug down, and I finally surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Then I found out that addiction also covers other areas. As you see, you know, I got a little pulch right here. So Haagen-Dazs ice cream, 2-for-1. Edamame cakes, 2-for-5.
Okay.
I found out I was powerless over, remember the lifestyle, having a girl and having a woman. Having two females at one time, unmanageability, the whole nine. And it was only through surrendering to the process of Narcotics Anonymous, getting a sponsor, someone who can guide me along through this journey, that things got better. I've been blessed with coming down here because I wasn't going nowhere. You know, I'm from the project. Where am I going to go? I'm not going to come down. Maryland?
Okay.
On an island? I showed my girl this thing on the map. This is in the middle of the ocean. And I said, how did they get high down in this? And then I also forgot that alcohol is a drug. Because my thing was that if I don't sniff any dope or shoot any dope or take any methadone, maybe I can hang around people, places, and things. And this woman said, boy, I seen you going to the meetings there. And, you know, they had the barbecue out there and it was smelling good. And I had my basic text underneath my arm just to show you how baffling this disease was. Come on over and take a picture. And just let me, and you can just hold the drink in your hand. But my thinking tells me, you still know how to pour that Bacardi. One third Bacardi, two parts soda, three ice cubes, and a cherry, and just hold it. And before you knew it, it went right to my lips. I jumped in a cab, and I had to go back uptown because I forgot that alcohol was a drug. But now that I'm firmly staying in the process of recovery and learning that it covers all areas of my life, things have gotten better. And the one thing that was always mentioned that I have to bring out, it is about getting a guard up in this camp. Because at any given time, I found out through reading in the basic text that I'm Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And also being clean, I found out that these other characters start showing up clean. You know, the slick guy wearing the, what I got on, Ballberry. I can wear an Avex jacket and turn the Kango hat backwards, and I still think I'm a player, and I'm in a relationship. But the step work has shown me that those are defective characters that show up, shortcomings, and you better pray to your God, man. And get with some cats that are work, men and women who are working this program. And it gets fun. And thanks for letting me share.
Would anybody else like to share?
Okay. Hi, my name is Denise, and I'm an addict. First of all, I'd like to give thanks to my God. I miss my babies. It all started for me in detox. Going to detox. I thought that if I go to detox 1 or 2 days, I'd be okay. You know, I didn't have a problem. So I drank every day. I smoked every day. You know, they made the liquor stores and stuff. I didn't. You know, so I thought things was okay. So I went to detox, I think, about 7 times before I finally got it together. I kept hearing H and I saying, keep coming back, keep coming back. I wanted to sleep. You know, that's when I first found out I was pregnant, when I was in detox for the second time. Mind you, the first time, CPS had already came and got my son. But you know what? I still didn't think that I had a problem. It had gotten so bad, whereas though I had left my clothes over at detox. And I'll never forget the lady. She said, your clothes will be right here waiting for you for whenever you're ready to come back. I remember that last night, I had my daughter. I gave my daughter to a person just like me, but in my sick mind, I'm thinking that she okay. How can I not get high to take care of my child, but I can give my child to somebody else, to, you know what I'm saying, to get high. So that night, I don't know. I prayed so much. I ran into churches. You know, when you really want this thing but just don't know how to go about grasping it, that was the thing for me. I wanted it desperately. And I guess that's when my God said, okay. I didn't try to sit her down with these babies, but, you know, she's just still trying to run off on self-will. So I woke up, and I told, I don't break his name, but, you know, one of my old men, I said, you know what? Take me to detox. Mind you, this man that took me to detox so many times, I even beat him coming home. He'd be like, hey, you get back here. So I was like, I'm going to do this thing this time. You know, I'm going to really do it. I used to always sit around the tables, and my first thing after I take that blast, okay, I'm ready to go to detox. They got so damn tired of hearing me say that, you know. So when I went back, Miss Shelter say, you're back, you're here. You know, thank her heart. Bless her heart. I stayed there. I did the 7 days. I didn't call. I didn't know that my best friend was my enabler then. Mind you, I didn't have anywhere to live and, you know, stuff like that. So I thought that was the only place that I could go to and turn to. But God saw fit to see otherwise. I went to a treatment facility. I went to RAP, as a matter of fact. Didn't want to go to RAP because they want to wrap everything up. Okay. Your head, eat tofu. See, their words and all that scared me. You know what I'm saying? Mind you, I'm thinking I'm going to a cult or something. Stayed in RAP and did what I had to do. But this is the kicker, y'all. The people, places, and things. I got invited over to my brother and them house. And by the grace of God, I do have 15 months. But you know what? My brother actually put a video on my mother. Not to say that's the reason for me to pick up that bill, you know. But I slam dunked right into his refrigerator. You know, didn't go from one, whatever. And thank God I had enough that my God led me back to RAP. And as soon as I got back to RAP, I said, I had a drink. Yeah, I'm drunk. Help me. You know, and that's what I did. And thank God they accepted me. They disciplined me. And I had to do what I had to do. That let me know that I really wanted this thing. You know, because they say our disease is bad and cunning and powerful. And it'll sneak up on you at any time. It can sneak up on me right now. You know, and as always, you got to watch your behaviors. That's why whenever I see my behaviors getting funky, you know, because my sponsor going to be there, but she ain't going to always be there. My God is there. My God is always there. And I have to be there for myself and say, girl, what is wrong with you? Sometimes I lay down at night and I play my tape back. I have an 11-year-old. She reminds me of things that I done that I don't even remember doing. You know, I took my children through so much and didn't even realize it. You know, it's just a lot. I'm on this journey, and, you know, like you said, I don't know where I'm going, but I know one day at a time, just one day at a time, that's all I ask the Lord for, that I'm going to be okay, you know. And thanks for letting me share.
Okay, you all, we are about out of time. Is there anybody else who would like to share? We have a couple minutes.
Yeah, my name is Gregory. I'm an addict. I'm also residing in a shelter. You know, I've been in like 5 treatment facilities. I thought I was a chronic relapser, right? But what I got in touch with, I was a suffering addict who stopped periodically. You know, I really wasn't in the process of recovery. You know, step one got me in touch with my addiction, right? Because I really didn't know what addiction was. I thought I was doing things to satisfy myself, and I was enjoying them. Sometimes I went through problems and complications and getting what I want. But what I got in touch with, man, is that I can't use. You know, and I'm not only talking about narcotics. I can't use people, places, or things. Because anything that I do that puts me in a mindset of changing or altering my personality, my mind, or just allowing me to feel instant gratification is an addiction. You know, this process here for me today is of a different sort because I feel different. I'm doing things different. Things are manifesting in my life that allows me to know that I'm doing something different because I'm feeling different. You know, prior to coming to this function, this is my first time in Ocean City, right? Man, I stayed up at 3 o'clock trying to find out what the hell I'm going to wear. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm talking about, man, I'm gonna show them how to put it on. You know, man, I'm going to let the girls know where I'm at. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be standing by him with 15 years, and I'm going to do that thing. You know, but guess what? I shared about that thing, man, because it wasn't the right mindset. I shared about it because, see, my aim and my objective wasn't instrumental to my process of recovery. So what I got in touch with, Greg, you need to go up there and you need to enjoy yourself, you know what I'm saying, look around and get into that observation piece. And that's what I'm doing today. I'm doing a lot of observing, you know. But I feel good today. I also told myself because I had went to a convention center in, not Ocean City, but in Alexander. That was the first one I went to, right? And when I went there, man, I was intimidated, you know. I was intimidated by y'all dress. I was intimidated, you know what I'm saying, by y'all time. You know, and I had a whole lot of feelings of feeling inferior. I really didn't feel myself, you know what I'm saying? And I feel just like I wanted to use. You know, but today I realized I ain't got to use. All I got to do is express my feelings to somebody, tell somebody how I feel. Because I recall when I was young, some things happened to me. Y'all told me that I got to look at how I was, Gregory, before you start picking up the narcotics. Because I was having some problems, and what happened, I didn't know how to process my feelings. Because I didn't know how to process my feelings, I act out on them. And every time I act out on them, I got what I got. You know, when I came in these rooms, I came here bullshitting, identifying out, calling you guys punk suckers and everything else, you know what I'm saying? You got whipped, you know what I'm saying? That's why you're in here. I'm in here because I don't want to go to penitentiary, you know? But I found out that I'm also a punk, a sucker, a bam, and all them things. I wanted to be them things today. You know what I'm saying? Because what I found out, you know what I'm saying, when I was standing on the corner, when I was getting high, and I was looking at you going to work, and I was talking real bad about you, for real, I had a resentment towards myself for not being you. And I got in touch with that. But the best thing that happened to me, you know what I'm saying, is I accepted, Gregory, you an addict. Gregory, you's an addict. When you use, Gregory, you know what I'm saying, you cannot control anything. And that's what I got in touch with, an addict. I learned that piece. My sponsor said, Gregory, every time you read who is an addict. He said, we do not have to ask twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking is centered in drugs in one way or another. The getting used and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. And then it said, real solve and sell very simply. An addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continual progressive illness who ends are always the same, jails, institution, and death. And I done met them all. Death, I really met it because, see, when I came in here, man, I was feeling so bad. I ain't had no life. That's what I lost. I lost my spirit, man. And I'm getting heavy because this is a spiritual program. Now I'm understanding why. The day I'm working, yeah, I'm making $6.25 and I'm proud of it. You know what I'm saying? I'm proud of it. You know. I'm not being braggadocious or nothing like that, but you're talking about a person, you know what I'm saying, that used to have $300,000 or $400,000 at a time. Because that's what I did. But the day I understand, you know what I'm saying, I can't chase a dollar. Because if I chase a dollar, I'm going to get high. Because what I'm going to do, if I get a whole lot of money, I'm going to put on some real slick shit. I'm going to get a real slick car. I'm going to get around a whole lot of women, because that's one of my character defects. Women validate me. Women validate me. I like to carry a woman with me, you know what I'm saying, so you can say, see, and I thought it was me you was looking at her. But women's validating me, man. You know what I'm saying? So today I'm just getting in touch. Y'all allowing me to get in touch with a lot of things. You know, I ain't know what an issue was till I got here. But I used to always talk about it when I was young. You remember when you say, man, what, you got a complex? You remember when you was coming up and somebody asked you, what, you got a complex? And I did have a complex, but something happened to me, man. It made me off-standish, man. That made me vicious. It made me hostile, homicidal, and some more shit. And I didn't know how to express that, so I act out. When you called me something that got close to that issue, man, I act out, man. You know what I'm saying? Because I was hurting. I was ashamed, man. I was feeling guilt, man. I was separated from myself for a long time. Y'all allowing me to help me get myself together, man. Y'all allowing me to get no Gregory. You know that saying, it's hard being me? It is, because I didn't know me. That's why it's hard being me. But I'm getting a little cute now. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, thank you.